We discussed the introduction, and did we? How far did we get into the first chapter? Does anyone remember?
Reading together, we were discussing the first characteristic of devotional service.
Devotional service.
Relief from material distress.
And that's as far as we went.
That's all right.
We read that whole section?
No.
Not the whole one, but that's read
it. Okay. So there was a reading assignment to read the rest.
Yes.
Did everybody read?
Yes.
Okay. And everybody answered the questions?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so what we'll do is we'll go over the questions because they make up the base. Sit over there. Sit against the wall over here, bro. Sit there.
Yes. I've been wanting to finish that.
Okay, well, whatever you've done, that's just that much. And so we've also decided to, so we make the point now, we'll have a class again on Thursday at 4. So because this is too infrequent and we just lose the momentum. And this is a really an interesting subject matter because it's the basis of successful execution of devotional service. Knowing this book is essential. One can't really practice Bhakti Yoga unless you can study this book. It's just, everything is there. So, this is, Prabhupada said, read it once, read it twice, read it 3 times, study it. So, this is a very essential book. It's one of the most important literatures in Krishna consciousness because it helps you to understand what to do. When you get a machine, especially today's machines are quite complicated. They all have booklets on how to operate. And this is the booklet on how to operate, how to function in Krishna consciousness. Everything there is a very exact science. And the science is explained in detail by Srila Goswami. Okay, so I guess we should start with going over the class questions from the last one. So let's discuss the questions, and then we can see if there's any questions, and then we can go on with our reading. Okay, everyone has the list of their questions and everything? Okay. So, let me just give a little brief summary. In the introduction, of course, Rupa Goswami explains some basic principles of Krishna consciousness, and he explains the different meanings of the names of Krishna, explains the different waves and what of bhakti. He sets the stage. The first chapter deals with the 6 characteristics of devotional service. Devotional service comprises these basic 6 characteristics. This is understood by the instructions given by Rupa Goswami from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, what is the first question is what are the 5 kinds of liberation, right? So you all have that first question. The second one is briefly describe the 6 characteristics of pure devotional service and give examples of each. So, let's do question number 2 first. Okay, let's list the 6 kinds of, what are the 6 characteristics of devotional service? We'll go around the room and we'll get all 6. What's one of them?
Brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress.
It brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Okay, that's the first. The second is?
The beginning of all auspiciousness.
It is the beginning of auspiciousness. So, understand when we go around, we have to understand what is distress and what is relief. What is auspiciousness? And how it's defined in relationship to bhakti. So the details of each category we get discussed. What's the third?
automatically puts one transcendental place.
Okay, now we have to understand what is transcendental pleasure as opposed to what is understood as pleasure in its material sense. Three. Number four?
Rarely achieved.
It is rarely achieved. Okay. Now we can discuss when this, that's why it's rarely achieved. Five?
The happiness of becoming one with the Supreme.
It derides.
Derides.
The conception of. Isn't it the derides the conception of liberation?
Liberation.
Yeah. Derides the conception of liberation. There are different types of happiness. One of them is becoming one. The bliss of Brahmanda. The bliss of what we say. Knowing oneself is not. Realizing oneself that I'm not this body. And obtaining what is called liberation in that state of consciousness. And the last one is?
It's the only means to attract Krishna.
It's the only means to attract Krishna Karshani. The only means to attract Krishna. Krishna is only attracted by the pure devotional service. Okay? You can sit closer. Because my voice is not so loud. Let me give her some room to sit. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
It's okay. Okay.
Is there a book that we can get or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know what you're gonna. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was hesitant to tell you because you'll read that and you won't read this.
I mean, I've been wondering about it for a long time because I always hear like different shlokas, everyone's chanting, or this means, like you just said, Krishna Karshani. So I always wonder some book, you know, if we can get those.
You want the cliff notes?
No, not the cliff notes. I want the Sanskrit that's been used to describe all these different things.
On the Sanskrit.
Yeah.
There is a book which is a commentary on Nectar Devotion. But I was afraid everyone would read that, and which is the explanation of what we're reading. And rather than reading this, and then everybody will just be quoting from the explanation. It's better to bring out the explanation through the reading.
You gave us the website for that.
You told us the Wave of Devotion.
Waves of Devotion.
I found on the internet. The mm-hmm. first chapter.
Yeah.
It's called.
Yeah. There's charts and everything on there. It's really, it's expertly done. Get it and read it on your own, and you can reinforce, or what we say, enhance your study of Nectar Devotion through that. But my hesitation is to read that. Without reading Nectar Devotion, it's like a person goes to school and he wants the cliff notes rather than study the course. He wants to pass the course. You know, that happens. People go to college. They don't want to do the study. They just want to get find out what's the essence and then memorize all that. And then somehow or other feed it back, and that's considered to be passing. And, you know, there's something. The idea is, let's really get into this and study it and bring out these points. But get the book and read it on your own. It's called Waves of Devotion.
Yeah, the Sanskrit in there also.
The Sanskrit of some things, but not the verses, though.
No.
The verses are not available that I know of, unless you can get the original copy of the Bengali edition. You might be able to find that in India. Yeah. And some of our libraries in India. We also have it, like an Mayapur library or something. But the verses, Prabhupada translated them.
Right.
And just did this. This is what you have here is a summary study of the Nectar Devotion. So what was given beyond that was a summary study of the summary study. So, we can do that. Yeah, I'll tell you the Sanskrit for all of them if you really want to know. Okay. Some of them anyway we can see. Okay, there's the six characteristics of devotional service. It gives immediate relief from all kinds of distress. So, in that section, gives immediate relief from all kinds of distress, what are the types of distress that's being mentioned here?
Is it sinful reactions?
Okay, there's two categories of sinful reactions. What are they called?
Immature.
Right. Mature sinful reactions and immature. Sanskrit is? You're going to say it. Yes, that you got
it. Remember Prabhada?
Yeah, it's called Prabhada.
Prabhada?
And?
Su.
And Aparabhada.
Aparabhada. So, that's why I was asking about the. It's not mentioned in here. That's like those like little words. That's
you can get in ways of devotion.
Oh, they're mentioned now. Those like little words and stuff.
Everything's mentioned there. Get the book and read it. You can, if you get one copy, you can share it. Okay. It's good. I mean, it's good to read. Parabdha and aparabdha. Those material activities that are mature and those that are immature. What are the four aspects of sinful activities? How do they? What are the four categories? Did you read that?
Yes, that's question three. Correct.
Is that?
Yeah.
Before, oh, okay. We'll get to that.
And the two types of sinful. I asked this question about that.
Right. Okay, that's question 11. But before we can just understand relief, you have to understand what you're being relieved of. From the reactions of one sinful activity. It gives you immediate relief from all sinful activities. Why? What is the difference between that kind of relief and the relief of atonement?
Because of atonement doesn't.
When done, something does something wrong, when one wants to somehow or other atone for that. And what is the difference between the purification that comes by way of bhakti and the facility that comes by way of atonement of sinful activities?
It's still in the heart if you're atoning.
Yeah, atonement simply it's like cutting grass. When you cut grass, you just cut off the grass, but the roots are still there. And therefore that grass will grow back. Or we might say weeds. The weeds still remain. So sinful desires are lodged within the heart and they manifest within the mind. And then, when we engage in devotional service, we not only clear the mind, but it uproots the cause of the sinful activity, which is the desire within the heart. It destroys the seed. It burns the seed to ashes. It destroys the seed. And that's the difference. You see, I guess the common example is that a person commits a crime and goes to prison and comes out again and continues to do the same thing. Why? They've been punished. They maybe even suffered a lot, they've been denied a lot of facility, yet still the propensity to commit the same activity continues. Why? Because the desire remains within the heart. So until that's removed, the tendency to commit the activity remains. And therefore, under certain circumstances, something will trigger that desire again. And then once it's triggered again, one will, start moving in that direction. So that's it. Whereas Krishna consciousness by chanting the holy names Cheto, Tarpanam, Marjana, the heart becomes cleansed, the mind becomes purified. So the tendency to commit those activities, not only are destroyed, but one develops a distaste for that activity. One starts to actually feel averse to that activity which one was so eager to perform before. That's the difference between atonement, which is called praschitya, and bhakti, which is the element of cutting or destroying the seed in its very, you know, basic principle. See the difference. Okay, that's one example. One gets immediate. I guess we can go over this first section. What are the four kinds of sinful activities? What are the four effects of sinful activities?
Four stages?
No. Four stages are different. What are the four effects of sinful activities?
Not yet fructified.
Okay.
Those lying as a seed.
Seed.
Those which are already mature. Mm-hmm. And those which are almost mature.
Okay. So what is this? What's the one word for all this stuff called? What is it called?
Karma.
Karma, yeah. But in more specific, according to Bhagavad Gita's definition, what is it actually called?
Vikarma.
Vikarma. Karma is given a specific definition by Bhagavad Gita as being auspicious, or what we call activities which are considered to be acceptable, moral and religious activities. Those things that are, what we say, beneficial on a material level, such as giving in charity, feeding poor, opening hospitals, just being kind to people. Basic exchanges between human beings that are pleasant and auspicious. That's karma. Vikarma means activities which are against auspiciousness or inauspicious, such as things that fall into the category of sin. And then what is the other activity?
Akarma.
Akarma is?
Transcendental.
Those activities that do not perform, do not produce results. They don't bring any good or bad karma. They simply awaken one's devotion to the Lord. So, okay, learn these four kinds of things. Now, in that book, Way with Nectar Devotion, it has a chart. And in the chart, it has these four things, and you can see how one thing leads to the other.
Could you explain that, the process, because there's an explanation in there of almost mature, lying as seed, and an inter effect. But mm-hmm. What's the difference between not yet fructified and is almost mature?
It's just different stages, that's all. And not yet fructified is a more previous state than almost mature. That's all. It's just different than levels. I guess when you really study karma, you can understand. Who cares? We can't study it completely because there's no scripture that really gives a detailed explanation. But karma is quite intricate and quite hard to understand. That's why the basics are given here. Is that there are some karma that what we're doing, say we're acting materially. If we were acting materially, what we will be doing now would be planning some reactions to our actions right now. And then a little bit more, that's starting to, it's like a flower, and it's starting to grow. That would be like fructify. And then when the flower is about, you know, reach before it reaches maturity, it's coming, and then finally it manifests. In other words, it's all different stages of the same activity. That's all it is.
So the almost mature process, are we actually experiencing that at this point?
Almost mature?
I guess I'm trying to define mature. Does mature mean that I've experienced the karma or not experienced?
That means you're experiencing it. And it's going on right now, generally. But for a devotee, it's a little different. Devotee, actually, Krishna, what Krishna does, he allows that karma to manifest in the devotee's life so they can deal with it and, what we say, eliminate it. Krishna doesn't take all your karma, or even when you get initiated, there's a kind of karma where your past desires, although you don't get the results of them, you still get the chance to fulfill them. In other words, if you have desires and you're going to suffer the reactions of that. But when you come to Krishna consciousness, the reactions of your past activities are Krishna just pushes them aside. You don't have to suffer, you don't have to enjoy the past, the results of your past. But you still have to face those objects that you're attracted and averse to, and which can produce further karma if you act upon them in the same way. So Krishna will not... The desire seed is still in the heart because we're not completely pure yet. And the manifestations of the objects which attract that desire to play itself out are still there. So sometimes we're thinking we're suffering from our previous karma. We're not. It's just that Krishna is not allowing that part of our life to be eradicated without a struggle. You have to go through that. You have to say no to Maya. You have to say no to your previous attachments and for previous attractions. And if you act on them, you plant what is called a type of karma that is not really the full manifestation of karma, but is a token reaction, where you get a reaction to that, but it's like a reaction that is like punitive. It's not like full force. Because Krishna is merciful because you've taken shelter of devotional service. Therefore, he gives you a little slap just to keep you back. You know, it's like a little punishment of love. But if you're under the influence of the material energy and you act in according to this, you get the full force of your karma without any intervention of the Supreme Lord. What's the difference? So basically we're experiencing that kind of karma yet, because Prabhupada explains when you come to Krishna consciousness, you pull out the plug in the fan. So when you pull out the plug, does the fan stop?
Immediately.
No, the fan doesn't stop immediately, but there's no more current going into the socket. So as soon as we engage in devotional service, we're not putting anything more in our karmic account. We're still getting the reactions of our previous activities to some degree. That's up to Krishna, how much he wants to give us. And then when the spiritual master comes along, he takes a portion of that karma on the first initiation, and the second initiation he takes all of it. And then you're free from all your previous karma. But you can create some problems if you act in the wrong way. Again, you'll get a little slap here and there. Right now, you're not, as long as you're engaged in devotional service, you're not putting anything more into your karmic account. You're free from that. But still, the residual part of your karma is still there. It's still playing itself out. And so it's going through these stages, whatever stage it is. It's the seed. It's the blossom, it's the almost mature, and then it's finally manifest like that.
What if you're doing something for the want to, like washing dishes, but you're not thinking of Krishna?
It depends on what you're thinking of. If you're thinking on how nice to wash the dishes, that's Krishna consciousness. If you're thinking how to do the service nice, because Krishna and Krishna's service, no difference. If you're absorbed in the service, you're also absorbed in Krishna, because Krishna is none different than devotional service. But if you're thinking of something else, outside of your service, then you're what is called not fully engaged. Your body's engaged, but your mind's somewhere else, therefore the benefit that you get from that service is minimal, because there's activity and the activity is in the right direction. But because the consciousness is not focused, you can't really experience the benefit of what you're getting. and you're not actually getting as much as you could get if you were actually absorbed in the service, or you're absorbed in thinking of the object of the service, either one. So full devotional service means body, mind, words. Not just body, not just mind, not just words, but all three. Okay? Good. Okay, so it gives relief from all material distress. Any more further discussions on that point? As far as giving relief from this material distress. What does it mean? I mean, it's a long section.
Also, he said that the devotional service removes the first evil that is caused with the cause also of sinful activities.
False ego?
False ego.
What is false ego?
It's when we think something that we are not, right? Thinking that we are our body.
False ego is to think something that is not, that is extraneous to your, to your, to the soul. I am, whatever you put after there, if you put it, you put I am spirit, soul, part and parcel of Krishna, that is
Rigo.
If you put anything else, that's part of the false designation. Remember what it is. I am a man, I'm a woman, I'm tired, I'm learned, I'm ugly, I'm beautiful, you know, whatever you put after that, that doesn't pertain to the soul, is what we say, an aspect of the false ego. And if you act on that consciousness, then you're acting under false ego. You may have a material identity and refer yourself as a material identity, but one should see the difference, that's all. One should know the difference, although they don't go around explaining the difference. You know, someone says, what's your, you know, where are you from? You say, I'm from India. I have an Indian body. But you know you're not the body, although you're talking to someone on a level of just a general conversation. But that doesn't mean you're acting in false ego. It simply means that you're dealing on that level. But as soon as you identify yourself as something material, that is called false ego.
In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a mention where Krishna is talking to Uttara, and mentioned that actually is that what we experience, pain and pleasure, suffering, we actually experience it by false ego. And then how we feel pain actually? How do you say that the false ego experience the pain, but the soul experience the pain?
When you go to sleep at night, do you experience that pain?
No.
Okay. So, but say you wake up, so you're going to sleep at night and you dream. So in the dream, what do you experience? You're experiencing something different. There's an experience there. Right?
Experiences, but I'm not feeling pain.
No. You might be feeling something due to the dream.
If I feel pain, I'll get up from the bed.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. You might wake up, yeah. But that same experience of pain doesn't happen on the gross level. So, what I'm saying is that what you experience in waking time and what you experience in dream time is just an identification with the body on two different levels. Each time it's temporary, so it changes. Nothing that you experience on the material level is permanent. It's all temporary. So that pain and pleasure has nothing to do with the soul, because the nature of the soul is eternal. It doesn't deal with the temporary. It's not part of the temporary. So the body, the mind, and anything connected to the body and mind is temporary. So pain and pleasure is also part of that temporary phenomena. So when you experience pain and pleasure on any level, whether it's in the dream or within the waking sense, it's all due to the Bali conception of life, which is false. That's all false. Therefore, it's a manifestation of the false ego, as Krishna says in the Gita and in the Bhagavatam. It's false. You identify with it. As soon as you stop identifying with the pain and the pleasure, then it has really no effect in your life. You may experience some what is called sensation due to the facility that it's causing you, but at the same time you don't identify with it. It's just there. That's all.
Actually, they're saying pain and pleasure. Pain and pleasure is all illusion. Is all maya. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. How do you understand that?
Because it has to do with the body. The body is not the soul. So the body is separate. Just like, again, it's illusion because on the pain that you feel during the day when you go to sleep at night, you don't experience it. You're in a different world. So where is that pain there? It's illusion. It's gone. But what you experience during the day, you don't experience the same thing you're doing at the night. So where is that? That's also gone. So all these things are temporary due to our state of consciousness, whether waking or dreaming. So it's illusion. Anything that is temporary is categorized by Shastra as being illusionary, or what we say meant within the temporary realm.
You mean to say
you still may experience pain, but you don't identify with it. That's all. The identification with the body is not there. And in even some cases, the pain is not there due to lack of identification. Just like they say sometimes a pure devotee goes through suffering. No, he's not going through suffering. It appears from our vision that there's some suffering. He may experience some inconvenience, but he doesn't experience suffering like we do, because we're still under the bodily conception of life. Pure devotee is not. Therefore, he doesn't identify with it. Identification with the body means identification to what happens to the body. That's all. One who is fixed in Krishna consciousness, we'll speak about that called one of the aspects of pure devotional services. What's number five again?
The three types of happiness.
Deriving the concept of liberation.
The concept.
Oh, no. Your desire is not separate from Krishna's.
Number five,
I think it's
number... Did that become system of liberation?
It attracts Krishna. Isn't that the one?
That's the last one.
The happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. The happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. That's a type of happiness. But devotional service is called Sandrananda Visheshatma, which means that it's concentrated happiness. And concentrated happiness, nothing gets through. He's like, oh, when something is thick, nothing can penetrate it. So Krishna consciousness produces concentrated happiness, just like a piece of steel. If you try to penetrate steel, it's difficult. So one who's on a pure devotional certain level, his consciousness is solid. And what's going to go through there? Not hardly anything. There may be some attack from the external energy, but he's not experiencing it like we are experiencing. It's not the same. If you think it's the same, then it's called Atmanam Manyate Jagat. You know what that means? Atmanam Manyate.
Because if I think I'm a fool, I think everybody is fool.
Yeah, right. Whatever I think, everybody else is the same. Because I'm a thief, everybody's a thief. Because I'm happy, everybody's happy. Atmanam Manyate Jagat. Because I'm suffering, everybody suffers the same way. That's what that means. But actually we're not. What we experience on the material level is simply due to the level of identification. even the more one identifies with the body, the more they experience pleasure and pain. And the less you identify with the body, the less you identify with pleasure and pain. And when you're completely free from it, material pleasure and pain practically have no effect upon the material body, upon one's consciousness. Hardly anything. It's just like a little inconvenience or a disturbance, that's all. Otherwise, how was Prabhupada able to tolerate all these difficulties he went through? And they would have killed most people. And he was like 75 years old. Well, there is it. Because he's on a different platform. He's not experiencing that. Yes, Mataji, you have your hand up.
It was
answered. I answered the question? Okay. Yes.
Perhaps in the case of some yogis, that they don't experience pain, but yeah, still they have some false ego because they don't think they are eternal servant of Krishna. They are proud that they are not feeling pain. For example, those who are under the water in winter time.
Yeah, Vishwamitra Muni, he was able to meditate with seven fires around him in the summertime, sitting in the middle of seven fires under the hot sun. And in the wintertime, he immersed himself in an ice-cold lake, and he would meditate up to his neck. So how can he do that? I mean, you have to be transcendental to the body.
My question is that, although they are transcendental to the body, my question is, are they free from false ego? Because still they can fall down.
No, because what does it say about those who aspire for liberation? What is it mentioned? It mentions in the nectar, in this first chapter. What are they after?
Well, they merge into the Supreme.
Yeah, they want to become the Supreme, or they want to merge into the Supreme, or they want to enjoy on the level of the Supreme. In other words, they want something for their personal self. There's still some selfish desire there. So there are four classes of men. What are the four classes? What's the first one? No, four types of people. What are the first ones? Four categories of people in the world. There's no other four categories. What are the?
Karmis,
right. What's the next one?
Gyanis.
Yogis. Bhaktas. Yeah, that's the four. Karmis want sense gratification, pleasure, material pleasure. The Gyanis want
liberation,
freedom from material suffering. The Yogis want
mystic powers,
and the devotees want.